The Get This podcast is brought to you by ProPhotoGo.com, professional photography on demand. Use coupon code GETTHIS to get 10% off your professional photo session. So whether you need new headshots, or you have a big event coming up, an engagement, a wedding, you name it, or let's say you just want new photos so you can look snazzy on social media, ProPhotoGo is professional photography on demand. Use coupon code GETTHIS and get 10% off. Go to ProPhotoGo.com. The Get This podcast is also brought to you by the best WordPress hosting available, WP Engine. People who know me know I build enterprise-level WordPress websites that are seen by millions of people a year, and I host all of my websites with WP Engine. They're a company based in Austin, Texas. They have outstanding support, and I personally couldn't recommend them more. If you go to getthispodcast.com, look for the WP Engine link and get 20% off your first year of exceptional, fast, secure WordPress hosting at WP Engine. Again, go to getthispodcast.com and look for the WP Engine link for 20% off. Everybody, this is Kevin Kautzman coming to you from New York City, and this is Get This, the podcast about things people love. Welcome. I'm joined by my friend Vanessa Wolf. Say hi, Vanessa.
Hi there.
And Vanessa is a writer, creative person here in New York City, and she wants to share something with us today that I'm a little, I don't want to say I'm cagey about it, I'm just... First, I have to say, it's February 25th, 2019, and welcome to Get This, the podcast about things people love, like I said. This is going to be a good one. I'm really excited. I am going to confess to never having become a Harry Potter person.
Wow.
But I am ready to be converted. I think I'm primed. Of all the people in this zip code... You know, in my rough demographic, my age, all the rest of it, I'm the guy. So I'm excited to discuss what it is you wanted to share.
So, oh, wow.
Welcome to the podcast, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me.
How have you been?
I'm good. Really good.
Uh-huh. And what have you been up to? I know you were living in New York City, but then you moved to Portland for a minute and then you're back.
Yeah. So I ventured out to the West Coast. West Coast, best coast. And
then he came back.
So. I wanted to see some trees for a while, so, and breathe some fresh air, some fresh mountain air. So I went out to Portland for a handful of months, and I was doing some sales work there. And I decided it's not for me. I am not a salesperson.
You saw the trees, the wind moving through the pines, you know, and it was time to come back to New York City.
Exactly. I had my fix. I had my fix of nature. No. I really love nature, but there's something about New York City that I can't let go yet. Mm. So I had to come back. I'm like, I have my friends here. I have Kevin here.
That's too much. That's too much. I'll cut that out. Don't worry.
So, yeah, you know, pals. I couldn't let New York go yet. There's just so much here and so much culture and so much going on here. And I want to be a writer, and I am a writer. And in Portland, it's very hard to be a writer when you don't have that industry built there. You don't have the community there. Perhaps there's like a small community there, but in New York, you just have so many more people, much bigger community, much more access to resources, very different.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common issue, depending on where you move. I'm sure there are a lot of great people in, obviously there are a lot of great people in Portland.
Yeah, but, amazing people.
But here in New York, it's that case where you kind of have to, you almost have to avoid those connections. I mean, as soon as you open your mouth at a bar or a coffee shop, somebody's working on something. And once you start talking, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. If you're an extrovert, it's actually kind of a battle to stay home sometimes.
Yeah, I agree.
I've never been to Portland. I've heard nothing but good things, though. People say it's a lot of fun.
Portland's awesome. There are a lot of awesome people there and a lot of good personalities. It's very slow paced for sure. It's much different city than New York. I definitely had to slow down when I was there. Just even my walking pace alone, I had to, you know, just catch myself moving much faster than everybody else. And I'm just like, okay, I am in a different city. I need to adapt.
I had the opposite problem recently. I was in Costa Rica for a week, which is maybe a bit of a brag, but whatever. I was there and I totally chilled out and came back to New York. And we live up in the Heights. We're by Dyckman. And I think you're originally from here, correct?
Yeah, I'm from Inwood.
Yeah, there you go. You're from the Heights. And I've been going to the gym and I've been at the beach for a week. And I go to the gym and I do my squats and my lifts and all this. And I leave and I've got the light, I've got the crosswalk, and I'm walking kind of at a beach pace, but also kind of like a guy who just did a workout. And I'm getting, they're honking, they're flipping me off. They want me to be walking that much faster.
Tourists.
So they can make the left turn. And it's like, dude, I'm wiped out. Cut me some slack. Anyway, I feel you. So
that's exactly how we treat people at Times Square.
Yeah, right. So it's all a matter of degrees, isn't it? What would you say? Have you spent any time in LA?
No, I haven't. I've been to San Diego, so I've been to one of the more chill
That's cities. Pretty chill too, huh?
Very chill. Yeah. It's very slow paced.
Right. Well, so, they're all stoned. Everybody's high.
Yeah, all the time. It's just a bunch of surfers and people who are into country music. And
Well, and there's a big military component down there.
Very
there.
Big yeah. military.
I don't know how high they are.
They can't be.
Yeah,
no way.
I think they probably sneak some in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So Portland, you know, it was very good. It was very enlightening. You know, I got to see a different town. I got to see people. Cashiers ask me like, "What are you doing today? What are you doing this weekend?" And it was very shocking. It was very different. At first, you're like, why are you talking to me? I'm not used to this. You know, in New York, everyone's so cold. And, you know, you say hi to a cashier. She doesn't want to talk to you. But over there, everyone wants to talk to you. People in the elevator, people on your block. It's a city, but it feels like a very friendly suburb.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I'd like to visit.
Yeah. It's really worthwhile.
I met a woman on our zip lining thing that we did because I'm a basic bro. you got to go zip lining.
Nah, you got to get the tourist stuff out of the way the first time.
Yeah, I didn't take any. We didn't get any pictures, so that was I felt okay. But she was from Portland, and they were a little rough around the edges. It was revealed she's a waitress at a. This restaurant, I guess, in Portland that's quite famous for having this steak. I don't know how many ounces it is, but if you eat it, you get it for free.
Ooh.
But it's the size of your head.
Oh, wow. It's a
place. She was very proud of this.
I didn't get to go to that place, but I went to a lot of niche places like that.
Are you a vegetarian? Do you eat meat?
I eat meat.
You do eat meat.
I am a meat lover. I've tried to be vegan in the past when I worked at a vegan restaurant here in New York, but it didn't work out. I was secretly a meat eater while I was working there, and it was really hard.
Oh, damn.
Well, you know, I had the goal. Like, I want to be vegetarian. I want to be vegan. But, you know, the reality versus, you know, expectation is just, I don't like tofu.
You don't like tofu?
I don't like tofu, and it made me like feel weird, so.
Yeah, I've never had an experience with tofu where I really go, yeah!
Yeah, tofu!
Tofu!
Fuck yeah!
Woo! I'm Mr. Tofu today! Here we go! That's cool. So you came back to New York, and you are settling back in to the city here.
Yep.
And tell me about this scene you shared with me from... Which Harry Potter movie is it? Harry Potter and
And the Deathly Hallows. I forget if it's part one or part two. I do believe it's the last movie that they ever made for Harry Potter. But so basically, this scene was so exhilarating for me when I first watched it. So I hadn't seen it when it first came out years ago, like 10 years ago or more. And I binge watched all the Harry Potter movies. I had like this period in fall 2017 where I was like binge watching a bunch of different series like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, you know, all that good stuff. And I got to the last movie of Harry Potter and there's this scene where Snape dies and then he gives Harry his memories. He cries into a vial and then Harry takes it to Dumbledore's office and he pours it into some memory device.
he pours it into Google.
Pours it into Google. Read this for me.
Right.
And then he gets to see a completely different side that none of us had seen throughout the whole series. And, you know, I haven't read the book, so I'm not the most hardcore fan, but I do love the movies a lot. And I read a couple of the books. And so when I saw this scene, I thought it was one of the best plot twists I've ever seen in my life. And the cinematography of it was just beautiful. And that director, he's really good.
Do you know who directed it? I think it was somebody who was quite famous.
Yeah. I totally forgot his name.
That's all right. We don't have to look it up right now. Yeah. We can find it. Yeah. What we want to avoid doing on this podcast is research.
Okay, no research.
Our generation. We do a lot of research. We could look it up at a good point. But
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so I was blown away by it. I think I cried a bit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
I suppose we should say there are spoilers here, but at this point, I don't think it's too salient. I think
if you like Harry Potter, you've seen this movie.
Yeah. Frodo drops the ring into Mount Doom at the end, folks.
Yeah.
let's just accept we're a few years past this. I never got into Harry Potter, and so I'm interested in your journey to get there. Because again, this is the podcast about things people love. So something that moves you like that, I'm so interested in how it speaks to you.
Right. So, you know, when I first got into Harry Potter, I mean, it was actually the last couple of years. And when I was younger, I liked it, but I wasn't a super hardcore fan. So I never even finished the series when it first came out. I just thought it was...
When you were reading it.
Yeah, that and also like the movies themselves. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like there in the theater when they came out or anything.
You weren't camping.
I wasn't camping with my muggle hat and a wand.
Let me guess, you had boyfriends, you were socializing, you were doing okay.
Yeah, I was doing cooler things.
I understand.
Not really.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
But so when I saw the scene, I was just blown away because here we have a character like Snape who we think we have figured out from movie number one. You think he's a bad guy. He's always treating Harry and his friends like shit. And you're like, why? Why are you doing this? Like, why are you such a terrible person? And, you know, Slytherin's automatically a bad guy, right?
He's the headmaster of Slytherin, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, he is, yeah.
Even that phrase, headmaster of Slytherin, it just doesn't sound. I don't like anything. I don't even like the preposition.
Yeah. J.K. Rowling was really good at naming and world building. And she did a really good job with building him up in exactly how she wanted us to see him, you know, as this character that we thought we knew. And we thought we had him figured out, you know. It's just like any series that you love, you go into it and you have your favorites and you know who you love and you know who you hate. And he was a character to hate. Unless you were a hardcore fan and you identified with Slytherin, you hated Snape. But then the scene comes out.
Wait, so there was a group of hardcore fans who identify with Slytherin.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah, so there
are... So now you're piquing my interest. That sounds cool.
Yeah, there are fandoms out there where people will take quizzes and...
Oh no.
And they want what house are you in? Are you in Ravenclaw? Are you
what house are you in?
I tested as well. I'm in Gryffindor.
Oh, wow. I don't know. This podcast is going to be brief. I don't know. I'm starting to feel like a Slytherin guy. You know, I did one of those quizzes, but for BoJack.
Oh.
And I was BoJack, which people who know me will I think agree. Anyway, go on.
I haven't actually engaged in the BoJack Horseman.
I'm not trying to, you know, steer you away from how, you know, but yeah, check out BoJack.
I will.
You were saying.
So here we are. You know, we have this character that you either love or you hate. Most people hated him and thought he was like the worst person ever for making Harry's life and difficult. And he always seemed shady. Just this dark, gloomy guy who is out to get you. And so here's a scene that puts him in a completely different light, complete 180. And now I'm like, wow, I have these feelings now that I have to deal with. Like, I hated you for 7 movies or, you know, for the majority of the time. And then now I'm like, shit, I kind of love you now.
This scene turns it all around for
me.
Yeah.
It turned it out completely for me. Wow. And not everyone feels that way. I've read mixed, you know, reviews, and a lot of people are like, no, he's still the bad guy because, you know, he loved Lily, but, you know, but he also treated her poorly at some point. And when she married James, you know, he turned to the dark arts and Voldemort. So he's not deserving of any recognition or love or anything. He's still a bad guy. But I don't see it that way.
So there's this whole soap operatic drama.
Drama.
What was it about the... So you're specifically talking about the scene in the Deathly Hallows where Harry gets to see the memories of Snape.
Yes.
And what was it about the scene and the way it was handled that moved you so much?
So the content itself, you know, so we have the beginning was beautiful. Just we have Lily as a little girl and she's basically shunned by her sister, who we all hate because, you know, that's Harry's aunt who treats him like shit. So we automatically are like, wow, you automatically recognize who that is. So and then we have Snape kind of save her from her sister, and then they build this lovely friendship, and basically all they had when they were kids was each other. In this Muggle world, all they had was each other.
Right, that's very relatable. I appreciated when I watched it the cinematography.
Yeah,
it's clear we're clearly doing a dreamscape
kind
of a scenario and kind of a high European artistic style. It's not the greatest cinema that's ever been made, but it's really bringing an elevated style to something that probably deserves it.
Exactly.
Pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Fun to watch. Yeah.
I mean, I love British film and TV in general. Like, I think it's pretty awesome, and some of my favorite movies are British, like The King's Speech. Yeah, so I have also a scene that I'm obsessed with from The King's Speech, and it's the scene where the king does his final speech, and that was my favorite scene for years.
Yeah,
and I think the Snape one took over. Yeah.
Well, so you said you didn't, so you read the first few Harry Potter novels, and then didn't continue reading, but then you binge-watched the whole
series. Yeah, the whole series in a matter of like a week.
In a row.
I'm a good binger.
Yeah.
Put that on my resume.
Yeah. A strong binging person, indeed. And then this scene really particularly strikes you. But are you a reader? You must. I mean, you're a writer, so you enjoy reading.
No, I do enjoy reading a lot,
What are you reading now? Are you reading anything?
Right now, I'm actually reading a few things. So I'm reading C.S. Lewis.
Oh, wow.
So I love C.S. Lewis. And recently I got into his theology books. So right now I'm reading a book called Miracles.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm also reading Guardians of the Moon, which is a fantasy book. by Steven Erikson, I believe.
Are you one of these people who reads more than one book at once?
Yes. Recently, I've become that person.
Oh, geez.
Why?
Yikes. I don't know. Well, I guess I kind of do that too, but...
I can read them both in one day. I mean...
Really?
Yeah, no, like in the same day.
Yeah, if you're going really hard. Yeah. What is this Miracles book by Lewis? It's a book of theology?
Yeah. Cool. So C.S. Lewis was this really interesting person, as you guys may know. He wrote The Chronicles of Narnia. And I haven't even read those books yet. I haven't, but I've actually been reading his theology books.
Narnia, I believe Tolkien said to him to not publish. He said, you're gonna embarrass yourself, I think. That could be apocryphal. That could be BS. But they
were friends. They were close friends.
They were pals. I think they were frenemies.
At first. C.S. Lewis was an atheist for a while, and Tolkien was, I think he was Catholic, and they were always talking about theology, and C.S. Lewis was very into philosophy and really interested in Christianity for a while, and really digging deep into it, and, you know, by his mid-30s, he decided he wanted to be, he became a Christian, and then he wrote many theology books, and he's really prolific. So I recently became a Christian again.
All right.
Well, so that's why I got into it. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. All right. What happened? What happened in Portland?
Oh my God. Well, Portland, I've just kind of been really existentialist for a long time. I've been like an existential person for a long time since I was a kid, but it's been really hitting me hard in the past like couple years. Yeah, so in Portland, you know, I just had kind of this moment where I started reaching back into something that I had explored previously, but not a lot. So I was Christian when I was a teenager, and then I gave it up when I went to college.
What are your folks? I mean, how are you raised?
My mom is Catholic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Or, well, no, she's Christian, but she was Catholic.
Well, Catholics are Christian.
Yeah, they're the same thing. Yeah.
It's not all the same thing, but I know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Part of the same bigger...
Right, the big umbrella. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you had a falling away.
Yes, for years and years.
Okay, all right. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Was there one specific event? And did you see somebody walk on kegs of beer out in Portland? Kegs of... I'm being a little...
Yeah. Clear. I'm teasing. Well, you know, I had actually, you know, I have Christian friends that I met at Columbia, and I had through the years talked to them and asked them questions, and I was interested in certain times in my life where I was feeling the most existential, and I would have conversations with them, you know, like, why do you believe in Jesus, and why do you follow Christianity, and what does it do for you, and, you know, just all these different questions. And at the time when I talked to them, I took it, but I didn't do any much with that information. I just was interested in their perspectives, and I was collecting perspectives, you know, I've collected perspectives throughout college from people of all walks of life, atheists and agnostics and people, you know, just in general. And through the years, you know, in my darkest moments, I've prayed, but then as soon as I feel better, I just give it up.
That doesn't sound like the spirit of the practice to me. That doesn't
right
sound like
I wasn't practicing. I didn't identify as Christian for 6 years.
When you say existentialist, when you say I feel, you know, I felt existentialist, what do you mean?
So last year, for some reason, while I was in Portland, I started thinking about death a lot. And I have this kind of obsession, and it hasn't gone away completely, but I'm just really interested in the topic of death. And, you know, it's something that it comes to us all. And so I was curious as to what different philosophies are out there around that, given that, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And, you know, I was very anxious at some point in the beginning of last year, and then that went away for a little bit, and then I came back in Portland while I was living there, and that's sort of what prompted me to explore my spirituality again, something I had been wanting to do for years but was putting off because I didn't really think I would ever find anywhere I fit in or anywhere that really called to me. You know, I thought, just be a good person and as best as you can, and that's it. That's all you can do. just try to, the golden rule. So we can't escape Christianity completely. The golden rule.
Well, you know, the golden rule is a pretty sound thing in as much as we're living in a society and we have to live amongst one another. So if nothing else, it's a very practical rule.
Right.
But without, I suppose, something like an organizing ethos, mm-hmm. or even a metaphysical, what's the phrase, belief.
Yeah.
You're doing it to be practical.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far that finally carries us when you're confronting the horrifying maw of the grave. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know,
it's not very comforting.
But then we have to be philosophically rigorous. Are mm-hmm. we? Are we? You know, yes. What are we? Are we looking for comfort from our faith?
Right. I mean, exactly. So that's actually interesting that you bring that up, because I wanted to make sure in the fall when I was exploring this that I wasn't coming to it from a place of fear. I did not want, even though I felt fear, I didn't want to come back to it from a place of fear, because I've done that in the past, and a lot of people do that. They're just afraid of something, and having a system in place kind of really gives them a lot of comfort, does the thinking for them. But I do too much thinking on my own to have any one system or any one person or any one institution tell me what to think and feel. You know, it's just a path, you know, a personal path I'm taking now, and it feels like the right thing to do for myself. And I can't explain it at this moment, but...
I respect it. It's for every person I meet who says that, I'm a Christian, I'm a, you know, renewed Christian, I meet plenty of nothings.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Nothing mm-hmm. is also fine.
Yeah.
So in New York in 2019, a young person, I think it's admirable. So it's at least you're thinking, at least, you know, you're engaged in some sort of grander.
Yes.
Yeah, thinking. Yes. What I've always understood around, and you're actually reading something of mm-hmm. merit when you're reading C.S. Lewis.
Oh, there's yes. so much.
Have you read? Yeah, he's great.
He's amazing.
Have you read the Screwtape Letters?
Not yet. I think I haven't. Yeah.
Ah, you have to read that. That's yeah, wonderful.
It's on my list.
Yeah, that's the sort of Cartesian concept. Like the devil is testing. It's really actually mm-hmm. quite funny. It's very
yeah.
witty. Yeah, and it's relatable, especially now. Every time I get on Twitter, I feel like it's the Screwtape Letters.
But, oh my gosh. I stay off social media.
Yeah, well, good for you.
Currently
for
off.
You. Yeah, good. What about Thomas Kempis? Have you read The Imitation of Christ by Thomas Kempis?
No, not yet.
That's another one I would recommend.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on my list.
Very popular, I think in the 16th century. And it's this almost like this book of meditation that this man wrote in Europe. I think he was there were no Germans then, but like German speaking, I think. I'm showing my, it's been a yeah. while since I looked at it, but it's lovely. Really, it's a classic. And
he's on my list too.
Yeah, there you go. Thomas Kempis. There you go. Yeah, wonderful.
So yeah, I've been reading. I read C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. And then recently I've been reading Miracles. And what I like about him is that he's a thinker like me. Like, I find that, you know, we have similar thinking styles, like philosophies and ways of approaching questions. And yeah, I just, for now, I would say that I really do agree with, and I can still question what he's talking about. But he's really good at questioning Christianity and a lot of things outside of that. So he doesn't ignore the hard questions that some Christians may ignore, you know, because they don't want to deal with it. He takes them head on. And he even says something interesting that you kind of mentioned earlier, like there are people who are nothings and that's fine. And he talks about that in a really interesting way. He says that there are people out there who are not followers of Christ, not followers of anything, but they're actually closer to being more like Jesus than anybody else.
You can be wildly iconoclastic and not believe in some doctrinal order, but almost certainly do more good in the world.
Exactly.
And that's, I mean, he was wrestling with the modern world and with the fallout from World War One.
Oh, yeah.
When was he doing the bulk of his writing? I think it was after World War II.
Yeah.
Was he sort of like a mid?
It was around that time. I think he was writing during that time. And mm-hmm. Mere Christianity was actually some radio episodes that he did. It was actually directed mostly at soldiers and people during that wartime. And he was like really trying to tackle this really hard question for people that are facing imminent death and war.
Yeah, fun. They say no atheists in foxholes. And so our recent descent into, not descent, our recent journey culturally into this kind of postmodernism is a sign of the success of our culture. And there's an irony in that because the culture has succeeded because the culture was predicated on a set of rules.
Yes.
And it's not, I'm not here to champion Western culture.
Yeah.
And yet here we sit in this, nicely appointed little studio in Manhattan, living like kings, like princes.
We are. Think about that all the time.
Ago. Yeah. Incredible. And even the lowest among us here in New York are better off than people who are doing pretty well 100 years ago. And it's...
Yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible.
It's crazy, right? And
crazy amount of growth that
we've
had.
Right, so now we just sort of... We get to indulge our, like, there's no God, but here's Netflix. I don't know. I think there's...
Pretty much.
Yeah. The existential view, too. Existentialism is such an interesting philosophy in that it's about pairing down to the absolute seed, the core of being,
mm-hmm.
the last choice you have, which is sort of your ability to end it.
Yes.
And which is extremely, when you say it, it's extremely dark, and it's not...
It's really dark.
When you're a teenager and you buy your first beret and your first turtleneck, it's all very chic.
Right.
And then as you mature, you sort of go, wow, this is very intense.
Very, very intense.
I love The Stranger. I tend to read that every couple of years. You know that from Camus, that book?
Oh, wow.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's on my list too. I have a long list.
Yeah. No, this isn't
I have more books than I can read now.
It's just so good. Just this idea that we're strangers even to ourselves is such a right? It's just
strangers to ourselves. I actually read a book that's called Strangers to Ourselves.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, it was about the unconscious mind.
Yeah.
And
well, that's it.
A bunch of babble, but just kidding. No, it was not. It was great.
Who wrote it? Do you remember?
Blanking out right now.
Oh, we could look it up. We're not going to do any research during this podcast.
Yeah, it was one of the books assigned in my sociology class, which was also very existential time for me. I think Columbia made me very existential. And, I took a lot of philosophy courses that I was trying to satisfy these feelings, and explore them and try to understand a little more about... Where do our ideas come from? Where do our sense of self and our identity in today's society, like, where does all that come from,
What does it mean to you now to be a Christian?
Oh.
It's 2019. You're in New York City. You're up in Washington Heights. And I don't expect some easy answer to that. It's an interesting thing to say.
It is an interesting thing to say because I never thought I would say those things again. I was very divorced from it, and it's very different coming to it as a grown woman. I'm 25, maybe 26, and last time I explored this and really went to church and all that, I was like 17. So it was a long time, and I kind of shunned that community. I was like, I don't want to be a part of it. I don't believe in the people that attend church. I don't believe in any of that. I just want to love people. And I still feel that way. I still want to love people. That's still my religion, really. Loving people.
You can do a lot worse than that. As a guiding star. Yeah.
So it's a little strange to say to people that I've known for years and years, but I'm amazed by how open people are to it and how accepting and supportive, you know, because sometimes it can feel like people that call themselves Christians in America can be really ostracizing, at least the loud ones, you know, that you read articles about, like, you know, with Make America Great Again hats and, you know, the religion of republicanism that is coming about.
They used to have more power than they even have presently. They were the authority in the 90s, the 80s and the 90s. They were the censors. They were the ones telling people what they could say and couldn't say. And then they paired with the neoconservatives and drove us into two losing wars and lost the population, lost their popularity. And so now they've been relegated to the fringes of society. Ironically, or not ironically, but sadly, I guess it's the thing that you're saying. Christianity then gets paired with them.
Yes.
And of course, it continues to exist in the culture.
Yes.
These immigrants coming in from Central and South America are not card-carrying atheists from Columbia University.
No, they're not
Catholics, and it's interesting. It's gonna continue to be a part of the culture.
It is, and I find it really strange. You know, that's part of a big part of why I think I turned away from it when I was in college. Is I saw all the love that people were giving me in college, and they didn't have any religion, and yet, you know, the people in the public eye, or at least the narratives we get through media, are of quite hateful people who are not very accepting.
You mean of the religious right?
Yes, exactly. The evangelical Christians. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a shame. I mean, the media is chasing. I don't mean writ large, but there's a significant chunk of it that's chasing clicks and outrage and divisiveness and all the rest. And there's that quiet, gentle brand of Christianity that isn't very good clickbait.
No. And now there's a lot of violence that we see all the time on in the media, and that's what gets portrayed, you know, like, how can Christians who claim to love and be kind and accepting and follow Jesus and his ways then turn around and shun people and want to take away their rights and want to shun them from a better life?
Well, there's so many people who identify as Christian. There's bound to be, it's a bell curve, and there's bound to be people on. It's similar to Islam,
right? There's exactly.
The,
yeah,
the middle ground, and then there's the fringes, and
There's minority.
How can you call yourself a Christian and watch that Harry Potter deviltry?
Well, first of all, J.K. Rowling is Christian.
Oh, is she?
Well, I don't really think there's anything wrong with watching Harry Potter.
For the record, neither do I. I've got my tarot cards here. I'm getting a Ouija board any day now. I'm summoning demons. I may need to call you. we might have to start podcasting like monthly. You come with some holy water.
All right, let's do it.
save me for myself.
So first of all, you know, who I am as a person hasn't really changed in terms of how accepting I am of other people's work and how much I love film and writing. I mean, I'm going to read what I want to read. It doesn't matter what it is.
What? Yeah, right. I mean, my question was a bit of a whatever I was being, I was being cheeky. But
oh, no, no. Well, there is people, there are people out there who...
They freak out. They're like purists. They're puritanical about it.
So Harry Potter actually got banned in a lot of schools a while back.
Witchcraft, devilry.
Yeah. Ugh. When it first came out in the 90s and early 2000s.
That's the best fucking thing that can happen to your book. Is
it gets banned.
It banned.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I want...
Now she's the billionaire.
This, ban this podcast. Please.
Please ban it.
Ban it. Yeah, take it off iTunes. Absolutely. Yeah, ridiculous. How do you... And, of course, you don't... There's a supreme irony in that you don't get the literary tradition out of which Harry Potter sprang without the background of the Judeo-Christian West and the Bible. You have these motifs that are being repeated. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings has
the same.
Yeah, and this mixture of paganism and Christian motif that interweave.
Exactly.
And that's our culture. And this is something we should celebrate and enjoy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I fully support fantasy writers and filmmakers, for the record.
So you're not a kook. That's good. Hey, and if you're a kook out there, go be a kook. Do you? Do you? Just don't make me do you. That came out weird.
just don't force me.
Just don't force me.
To be more like you.
To do you. That's all. So, okay. So, and you're also a writer. And are you, do you have anything, you're bopping around in your head right now?
I'm actually writing a fantasy series right now. Well, one book. I don't know if it's going to be a series yet, but.
That's cool. Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's in the beginner stages, but I'm hoping to have a finished manuscript by the end of the year. It's a novel. So I've never written a novel. I've mostly written poetry in my life. So this is a much longer project.
The focus that it requires to maintain
a
novel, and you have to go over it 12 times, 20 times with an editor, and I just...
Yeah.
Oh, to remain that interested that long in one... I mean, I understand it's a lot, and if you love it, you're going to love it, and you're going to give birth to it. I admire novelists so much.
Yeah.
I've certainly made attempts that I would describe now as abortive. I have about as much attention as it requires for a full-length play or a feature film, and barely that.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it started out as a screenplay idea, but it did. But I decided that I wanted to write a lot more detail into it, and I just, my ideas were to the point where I need a novel to write.
That's cool.
And then I was thinking I could adapt it into a screenplay, because my ultimate goal is also to be a filmmaker, but that is a much more long term goal.
You know what? Novel was originally a screenplay, was No Country for Old Men, and when he adapted it to a novel, and then it sold and the Coen brothers bought it, I think there was some talk saying this is going to be the easiest screenplay adaptation of all time, because it reads like a screenplay. And of course, but then they added their magical sauce and made it this incredible thing. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Oh, yeah. No Country for Old Men is so good.
Oh, my God. Is it a classic?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a classic. That was the year, I think it was 2007 or 2008, when that was up against There Will Be Blood.
There Will Be Blood is one of my favorites. Yeah,
There Will Be Blood is amazing. I saw There Will Be Blood in the cinema.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
I couldn't believe that No Country for Old Men won best picture. Because I had seen No Country on my TV, and then I rewatched it after it. Well, blah blah blah. But that was such a good year for cinema. Just incredible.
Amazing. Daniel Day-Lewis. Can we talk about him? He's cool.
No, he's the GOAT. Is he still acting?
So apparently he decided to quit acting for like the billionth time, and he's supposedly now retired. But we can only hope that he gets bored and comes back.
We'll see. He prepares a role for years. So he could technically be retired for 4 years and then come back and crush it with something new.
Oh, I hope so. The comeback. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, he's amazing. I'm excited about The Irishman. Have you seen about this? The new Scorsese movie?
Oh, he's a good dude.
Yeah, it's got Pacino, De Niro, Harvey Keitel, someone else.
Wow.
Oh, and his name's escaping me. The little guy.
Oh, wow. Yes. Danny DeVito?
Not Danny DeVito. I was going to say not Danny DeVito. The other little guy. But he's a total killer. He was in Casino.
Oh, it's going to be amazing, then.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Yeah. Yeah, Scorsese doesn't put anything out that's
not. Can talk about The Godfather? I just saw The Godfather recently for the first time.
You want to talk about The Godfather? Okay.
The Godfather 1 and 2.
Yeah, the third one doesn't exist.
I haven't seen the third one yet, actually. Yeah. It was so depressing that I couldn't watch the third one.
No, you don't need to see the third one. And in fact, if you can spare your brain from having to see it, you're going to be happier. You can, but I would encourage you to research the history about how it got made and kind of botched.
Wow. Marlon Brando, though.
Wait, so let's talk. Yeah, this is great. I like this wandering conversation where we talk about different stuff. So, okay, number one. Why, you said you're 25, 26. Why are you seeing Godfather for the first time? Who hurt you? Who hurt you? My friends and I, we were such nerds in high school. We watched The Godfather. We went to the Goodwill store on Main Street and bought a bunch of suits and walked around the mall like a bunch of knuckleheads. 12 years old.
So I have a confession. When I was in high school, I was really into horror. So I was one of those people, which is loved.
You were cooler than I was.
I loved horror, and that's what I watched, and I found it hilarious for some reason. It's not twisted I am.
Well, and now you've come back to Jesus.
So
let's talk about The Godfather. Let's talk about The Godfather Part 1. Did you watch them right in a row?
Yes. Okay. Probably like the next day I watched Godfather 2, and I was in love.
So you made a nice cannoli.
I made my pasta
with
some wine and a cigar. Yeah.
Incredible. The first one is so iconic. The wedding sequence.
Oh yeah.
At the beginning, and they have the cameras. The FBI is taking pictures, Sonny comes out, smashes the cameras. The way character is revealed through action is so great in those films.
And they actually made me care for Al Pacino's character, which I was like, I don't know why I like this guy.
Well, he's the paterfamilias. He becomes the man. And that's the genius of that, of those two films, is that it's anybody who's vaguely paying attention to life generally, but also to life in America, has to have a nuanced, multi-dimensional appreciation for this country. You can say America's a great country, but you can say it with a little bit of a wince. It doesn't have to be this. Everything else is jingoism and bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, there is an unhappy dispossession to life in this country, and we could list a litany of very smart things that are pretty obvious that are at the root of the original sin of this country, the pain of this country.
And, we got many pains,
but that film just does something where it's just the American, it's the American dream, it's the American myth, and when he shuts the door at the end of the first. It's the first one, right? When he shuts the door on her.
That was amazing.
Doctor. And who used whom? Was she using him for something? What was she getting out of him? What was he getting out of her? All of it. And of course, it's so funny that, you know, the whole family, the whole time, I want to make us legit. I want to make us legitimate. I want to make us legitimate. And there's this subtext or this sort of motif that it's like, no, you are legitimate. You are what this country is about. This is who we are. So let's have no illusions.
Yeah, we're a bunch of mafias.
We are. It's a used car lot with a lot of guns. I mean, and I love this country, and I don't mean that. Again, it's like you can have this nuanced look at it, and you can appreciate it for its dark side and its pot. Otherwise,
you have to.
You're a fool. You're a fool.
Yeah. I mean, I love this country, and yeah, I just became a citizen last year, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because your family is...
You're from Dominican Republic.
You're from DR, right?
Yes, but I was raised here in New York, and so it was really awesome to finally have you know, this piece of paper that said I'm an American citizen. You know, I already felt like that my whole life. I barely felt like I was a Dominican citizen, even though that's where I was born. So, to finally be recognized.
So you were born in DR. Where in DR?
In the capital.
In Santo
Domingo. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you're a first generation immigrant.
Yes, I am. Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's something also I identify with the movie as well, that immigrant struggle. Because even though it was the early 1900s, it was still very relatable to immigrants today.
It's shit don't change. Shit don't
they
change.
Come to New York, they struggle, they gotta do shit they don't want to do, and you know, and
get their hands dirty.
They gotta get their hands dirty.
Get some dirt. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they gotta get their hands dirty, and yeah, so yeah.
The second one, the great passage where De Niro plays the younger Godfather, and the great procession, and he assassinates the older corrupt mob boss and becomes the benefactor.
Yeah, that was.
It's.
I was rooting for him.
Yeah, it's never been equaled in cinema.
No, it's never been. Yeah. And the only part of The Godfather that I was like, "Why did you do this?" I understand in a way, but why? Is when he killed his brother. When he killed, what was it, Sonny?
Fredo.
It's all it's Sonny. No, Sonny was the older brother.
Right? I've only seen it 30 times.
Yeah, when he killed Fredo, I was like, wow. I don't know if I could watch the third one.
The third one's rough just because of it's a little inadequate. I should watch it again. Maybe I'm a little too harsh, but the consensus is sort of like, okay, it peaks at the end of the second one.
Yeah, so I got that too, so that's why I didn't watch the third one.
He waits until their mother dies and then he kills his brother.
Yeah. Ooh. Just couldn't trust him.
Really? Well, of course. I mean, he's a liability. He could destroy the whole family.
Yeah, he went from this.
Well, his brother contributed to an assassination attempt on him and his family.
Exactly.
He's put in this impossible place.
Yeah, exactly. So Fredo's like, I don't know what I was doing. You know, and we never know if he actually knew, you know, if he was actually getting.
Right.
Like, well, feeling.
You have these. There are archetypes, right? You have the brother who's operating from this id and doing it unconsciously in Fredo. He's banging all the broads.
Yeah.
He's drinking. He's partying. He's the younger brother who feels jilted. And then he has this. He confesses to Michael in the second one that he felt passed over because he's the older brother.
Yeah, he's the older brother. So
just all of this Freudian, this great, Greek Freudian, just super intense stuff. And it just so dark. And, you know, he. Coppola fought for that soundtrack too. They were gonna not release it. They insisted on a different soundtrack, the studio or whoever it was, the producers. I don't know all the exact details, but and he just said, "No, this is the soundtrack.
No, that soundtrack
is the soundtrack
necessary." Oh no!
I mean, as soon as you hear it, you just like, the whole movie comes flooding back into your brain.
Exactly.
It's
amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
So good.
I'm gonna learn that on guitar.
You should do. Yeah, it's so iconic. Where did you watch it? You just watch it at home?
So I had this projector in Portland.
And
so I was watching. I was living like a king over there. Yeah, I had an amazing place in Portland. Something you can't get in New York for that price whatsoever.
Welcome back to the...
Oh, so sad.
The little dungeon.
So sad looking at the market here and realizing that I can barely have a room in a shitty neighborhood for the amount of money that I was paying.
The rent is too goddamn high, that's for sure. There's no... But it's that same thing we're talking about. It's that immigrant struggle. Everybody wants to be here. Every student, you know, not every student,
everyone.
But people come and they want to... It's that hustle and you got
Amazon
move.
Wants to come here.
No. We
kicked them out.
We got rid of Amazon. I had nothing to do with it. I have mixed feelings about that one.
No, I had very strong feelings as a lifelong New Yorker.
Well, tell me about that.
I had a feeling that I didn't want them to come. As many corporations as we have here, Amazon coming to Long Island City to push all these people out. And honestly, I know that a lot of people have been pushed out already. So what difference is it? But
that's a pretty big difference. They were, you know,
But they were just as big.
25,000 jobs, six-figure like, jobs.
No, I get that, but
I'm telling you that would have displaced a lot of people.
A lot.
That would have changed so much of the complexion of all of Queens.
Yeah, exactly.
Never mind Williamsburg and the Brooklyn and Greenpoint. The rest of it, it all would have changed. And those places are already like undergoing this incredible gentrification.
Yeah, so Long Island City is a place that I've been wanting to live in for a while, and I haven't been able to move in. And so when I saw that Amazon was coming, I was like, definitely can't go now. But then when I heard the news that they're not coming, I was like, yes.
I felt the same way. But... yeah, I was in Costa Rica, and I'm like, oh my God, holy cow. Amazon is not going to New York. What? That combined with the L train continuing to run.
Oh, yes.
Made me go, things are coming up our way.
Wow, New York is doing well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it might take you 4 hours to get from the Lower East Side to Bushwick, but you're going to get there. You're going to be all right.
I was really concerned about the L train. I don't even live in Williamsburg. I was like, oh, but I love Williamsburg.
Yeah, but it would have changed everything. People would have moved up here. I'm starting to see a lot more people who look like they're trying to dress like Bob Dylan in the 70s up here. I'm going like, I don't know.
Got the bell bottom pants.
I don't know what they're doing. And they got this facial hair. It's a certain look. I don't know.
Yeah, one of my first times in Williamsburg, I saw like three different people with bell bottoms. Men and women. I was like, oh, yep. I'm here.
Cool. $400 bell bottoms. That's cool. I don't know. That's an easy thing to pick on. It's a cliche. I like Williamsburg. I like the whole, it's a place that exists. It's weird. It's like you hear more French spoken on the streets than Spanish down there. It's a weird scene. All the tourists, everybody goes there. That's where they want to be.
Oh, I love Williamsburg. It has my favorite music venues, restaurants.
Oh, there's some great rooftops. Bars down there. Yeah,
they have this Brazilian place, amazing Brazilian place. Oof.
Call it out. What is it?
I don't even know the name, but it's like a Brazilian steakhouse. And
there's one. Yeah, there's one like that's like an Argentinian one that I go to. It's right off one of the stops, one of the first L stops coming into Brooklyn. It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so okay, all right. So we're winding down. This has been a great one. We're not done quite yet. I learned you're a Christian. You've just become an American citizen. You're clearly a Trump voter. What's that
no.
like? I'm just kidding. No. I'm just teasing.
Couldn't let you finish.
No. I'm just teasing. I'm teasing. And you just watched The Godfather. You're reading C.S. Lewis. This is what I'm talking about. This is why the concept for this podcast, it makes me so pleased, because I think when you open up the Pandora's box, I think the first thing somebody mentions is like a key to talk about different stuff that they get into. And there's a certain amount of logic where one thing bounces you to the next thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully other people feel the same way. So what's, in terms of your Harry Potter fandom, bringing it full circle, you know, are you... have you gone to see the play? Would you ever go do that? Are you? I mean, how diehard a fan are you?
I am. I'm a big fan, but I, for example, I haven't seen the second Fantastic Beasts movie, and I don't think I will. I might. I haven't heard the best things about that series, and I don't know. I might go see the play. I heard it's really good.
Yeah, it's in two parts, right? So it's like a whole day affair.
Yeah, it's like Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I think just J.K. Rowling needs to write some new stuff. I love her, but
yeah.
Girl, you didn't go. You need to go write about some other character. But I understand, you know, it's like a character she loves, a series she loves, and she wants to keep exploring it, you know. So
I mean, at this point, it's well
it's a part
beyond,
of her.
Yeah, it's well beyond one
just
person.
Just a part of her. There's like a whole online world dedicated to Harry Potter called Pottermore, and I'm not kidding. She's got this whole website dedicated to the background of different characters, like extra things that you might not even care to know. And that's how deep she is into it. She is like...
She's also obsessed. A billionaire, right?
She's a billionaire.
Can you imagine this person has conceived of a character and writes a novel and is rejected? This is such a...
Love the story.
I love it. I love it. Amazing.
Love it.
We're all world builders. We're all muscling... You're a New Yorker.
Yeah.
You're Dominican, so you get it. We're all kind of muscling through our world. Yeah. Wrestling with the world that's presented to us. And there is something beautiful about the creators who step aside. I mean, Mario Puzo, whatever his name is, the guy who wrote The Godfather. It's something about the artistic creative act that's so beautiful. You just create this, not pure, but this, it's just this like lever in a way, right? It gives you a fulcrum, like a point to kind of like leverage against the real world.
Yeah.
But also, I think we respect artists because we understand that we're living now in a world that is hyper-mediated. Everything in the world we inhabit is like, what's real?
Yes, you know, exactly. I agree with that completely.
Yeah, so it's like, we better damn well respect the person who can create a coherent vision of a world. That's a very, very powerful skill. This is why I admire filmmakers and fellow writers and all of the rest of it, and why I've aspired to be right. And even to create a podcast is something where you...
That's why you're admirable.
You're able to do all these things. You're very sweet. That's very nice. I'm just trying to... But I'm not alone, right?
Yeah.
It's we live in such a... We live like in an age of no excuses too, right? Like it's so... The equipment, it's not that much.
It's accessible.
It's accessible.
I love the accessibility that we have. And what New York is for me is like accessibility to people, most of all. People like Kevin and other writers who are out there and they're doing their thing and they're inspirational. I get inspired by New Yorkers all the time.
100%.
New and old.
Yeah.
Brand new to the city or been here for a while, and you know, they always have something awesome to share with me and part of themselves that I would have never gotten anywhere else.
I would almost tell, this is maybe sound like we're fetishizing the city a little here, but I mean, I've always wanted to live here since I was a teenager or even younger. And I just think it's such an important thing, even just for people of any kind of means whatsoever. Even if you have a job that lets you go, if you're an American or even not, if you're somebody who can travel, you know, come here for a month. It's pretty awesome. It's not the only city in the world that has that to offer too. Like I love traveling. I love London. That's
me too.
Great town. There's so many fun things to do. Yeah. I think we're explorers and so we're.
I live in London too.
Hell yeah! I'm gonna go to London and I'm gonna go see one of my favorite bands. Have you ever heard of Dead Can Dance?
No.
I'll turn you on to Dead Can Dance. They're gonna be doing two shows in London, and I've never seen them. I've been listening to them since I was like 14 years old, and I saw they'd put tickets on sale. They're not coming to the United States because Trump. Yeah.
Oh, really? That sucks.
Orange Man bad. I don't know why. Yeah, that's what they said. No, but they're based in London. They've always sort of been around. Well, I think they live.
British bands are also awesome. I am a big fan. Yeah. One of my favorite bands is Arctic Monkeys, and they're based in the UK. Yeah, I think I belong there for a little bit at least.
Yeah, it's not as inaccessible as you'd think, right? If you've got a couple of weeks or even a month, just rent a room and all the museums are free once you're there. And the prices aren't that much more intense than New York. You just got to get a place to sleep at night.
Yeah, you're an ex-Londoner.
I mean, I lived there for a year, and my screenwriting partner is still over in London, and so I feel like I'm in touch.
You're
over
connected.
There. I'm still connected, even though I don't know. We'll see. It's gonna be fun to go and visit again. I love that town. It's such an easy town to move around in too, especially now. Even though you're not supposed to say this, but even now with Uber and the ride sharing, although there's a lot of politics over there around that, a lot of the hip people there are like, I don't use Uber.
I don't need.
Well, no, they use the black. It's like a union thing. I do like dipping my toe periodically into their politics over there, not in any meaningful way, but just to like, you just turn the BBC on for an afternoon and you go, again, talk about world building, right? Like what we're concerned with. They're concerned with Trump and all the rest, but like then they have their own concerns.
They have their own stuff, yeah.
It's crazy. You just step into like 2 hours of their media and
it's really interesting.
You're hearing all these weird names and political parties and what's at stake and this and that. It's kind of fun. It's
cool traveling town. Traveling is like you get to step into other people's little worlds. Just even traveling in the U.S. alone, you get to see a whole new world that you haven't before.
That's one of the best things about the U.S.
Yeah.
We have so many of those. Denver, it's not like San Francisco, it's not like Portland, it's not like Austin, it's not like many, yeah.
Nope. Yeah, I've been wanting to go to New Orleans for a while. I've heard many great things about it.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
I've never been. You know what would be fun? I've thought about this trip at some point would be to take the train down to New Orleans from here, or to fly and then take the train back. Because I actually think you can take the train
all the Amtrak.
Yeah, it might take you 3 days. But
yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. Maybe you could stop along the way somewhere.
Well, yeah, you stop like in Atlanta or something. Yeah, and yeah, maybe stay overnight. Make ATL. Make a real adventure out of it. That would be wicked cool. Well, Vanessa, thanks for coming on the podcast and talking about Harry Potter. Do you have anything else you're dying to say? Where can people find you? Want to be found?
So right now, I don't have social media.
Jesus is your co-pilot.
On Instagram, you can find me at Vanessa Wolf. And then, I would have to reactivate it if I want you guys to find me.
Sounds like Vanessa didn't want to be found.
And then I have a website, but I'm working on it. So,
but where's it gonna be? Because this thing will be evergreen.
VanessaWolf.com.
And that's two S's and then WLFE.com.
Yeah.
And I'll put it in the show notes too.
Yes. So you can find me there. You can probably see my poems and ramblings and some of my work.
Tremendous. Thanks so much for coming on. I hope you come back sometime.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
Fantastic. Get this podcast.com, a podcast about the things people love. Thanks again. Thank you.